formation. He's going for the corner. He's got it. Texas is back. The kicker comes through.
We're back. Welcome back. This is Fire Tom Herman, your overreactionary Texas Longhorns football fan podcast. Today's a sad episode, as they always are when we have to talk about a loss to OU sucks. Y'all may have heard that Texas lost the Red River Shootout and the Golden Hat this year by a score of 34-27, unfortunately. Longhorns do get to come home to Austin this weekend to face the Kansas Jayhawks, but until we get there, sadness, anger, and disappointment are basically the overwhelming emotions. I'm Josh, here as always with Noah, and I've got to say, that game felt like one of the most disheartening losses that I've experienced since Tom Herman took over at Texas.
Yeah, the sadness, anger, and disappointment for me are going to last no matter what happens this weekend against Kansas. That was tough.
As long as they don't get worse, that's what I think we got to
right.
aim for
as long
this
as
weekend.
We don't, I'm not even going to say it, but as long as we win, I mean, it won't get worse, but there was really not going to be a bounce back, I don't think, for a couple of weeks. I don't know, maybe beating some sense into TCU will help in a little bit in 2 weeks, but I don't know. Yeah, it definitely was. I mean, I think it's the worst loss of the Tom Herman era, and I don't think it's particularly close.
And that's not even just by score, because that 7-point margin is really deceptive. I mean, you look at that, and if you didn't watch the game, you go, oh, okay, it was a hard-fought game, more defense than you were expecting, probably. But you see 7-point game, you go, okay, that's a Red River Shootout. It was a close one, hard-fought rivalry game. At no point during that game did I ever feel like we really had a chance. Like, there was something of a back and forth, but as soon as we'd score, OU would stretch the lead again. And it never really felt like we had a shot to ever grab the lead. It was just sort of, basically from the first drive where we went 3 and out, it was sort of that point where you could feel it even in the crowd. It was just a sort of resignation. It was like, uh-oh.
This game was close in the same way the Sugar Bowl was close. And there were actually like a lot of parallels, like one team coming in talking, the other team being more physical, having a better game plan, executing better, playing more disciplined and with more passion. So it just totally flipped the script from what we have seen from Herman teams in the past.
I mean, and it flipped the script for Lincoln Riley's Oklahoma.
Both of the Maryland games definitely had... I probably felt worse after the Maryland games, but this game might have been the most sad. I felt more angry after those. This one's just not happy.
There's no team on this schedule that I'd like to lose less, or like to lose to less than Oklahoma. So I think that's where it really doubles down. But yeah, definitely the first game outside of those Maryland games where I felt like we were really just out-physicaled, out-willed. You mentioned that sort of being the calling card for Tom Herman at Texas. The physicality that OU showed on both sides of the ball is really the opposite of what we've come to expect out of Lincoln Riley's Oklahoma. Usually they're sort of a finesse, not a powerful team, not the one who's going to come up and move you and just play with attitude. They're just going to sort of fly around, but it's never going to feel strong, I guess. OU's offensive line looked strong. Their defensive line, their linebackers looked strong. CeeDee Lamb obviously looked strong. It was just a gulf in between us and them as far as physicality is concerned. And that was exactly the opposite of what we saw last year in this game.
We're never going to beat Oklahoma by being less physical and allowing them to control the clock. Which, like, I honestly don't think it's possible for any team to beat them that way. I don't care who it is. Alabama won't do it. Ohio State won't do it. Clemson won't do it. You have to be more physical than them. You have to be able to slow them down. And I think that we tried to do that. You know, like, we had a lot of 3-and-outs. The game was very slow. But our most successful drives were the ones where we went with tempo. But I think that Herman was reluctant to speed up the game because he knew that our defense was going to get tired. I mean, our defense was tired by the end of the third quarter. But the inability to put together drives and get first downs, and even just to get positive plays like on first and second down, ultimately, it just doomed us. I don't even know what to say. It just was terrible from start to finish by the offense.
For me, that was definitely the most baffling part of it. I mean, we talked about it. We knew that OU was going to be able to move the ball on this defense, as they do against basically every defense. So that part is not surprising. Obviously, the missed tackles and everything are still disappointing. But by and large, for the most part, it played out about how we thought it would play out for our defense. Made a few stops in the red zone, some clutch turnovers here and there. But for the most part, OU moved the ball and scored when they wanted to score, and that wasn't unexpected. But definitely the most unexpected part was just how flat our offense looked in every phase, not just in terms of physicality, but creativity with the plays, a whole bunch of east-west bubble screen bullshit that just wasn't doing anything. The very few downfield shots that we took were either slightly off in the case of Sam's throw to Jake Smith, or just straight up dropped for Brennan Eagles. I thought that one was basically a sure touchdown, and it was one of those ones where once that play hit, it was okay, we're just not gonna find it today, because even just basic pitch and catch like that seemed like we couldn't even rely on that to work successfully. So the few times that we did find space and get time in the pocket for Sam to get the ball down the field was wasted, either by being slightly off or just not having focus from our wide receivers.
If we're just going to compare the two defenses, OU's defense versus our defense, was that OU came into the game with a very clear game plan. They had simple assignments. They executed it well. They were decisive. They were physical. And whenever you compared that to us, for example, like all those bubble screens, the reason they didn't work is because OU attacked them aggressively. Like they... Bookie came down so fast on those every single time. And the reason that we were taking them is because oftentimes if they don't put anybody over the slot, then that means that you can throw a quick screen for 5 yards, you know? So Oklahoma would have their guy in the slot play back to bait us into that. So I think that that's the issue, was the inability to adjust and to take advantage of that, because they play the same way every time. Like every time, whenever the guy went in motion, or as soon as he could tell that it was a screen or even looked like a screen, he just came downhill with reckless abandon, like didn't care about any other assignment. Like Bookie was going to get there, he was going to blow up the blocker, and he was going to get the tackle for a loss. And then you compare that to our defense, where in their defense, like Oklahoma's offense is much more complex, it's much more difficult to zero in on tendencies, and Lincoln Riley will actually punish you if you commit, if you sell out to do something like what Oklahoma did. He's going to take advantage. But I think it just was obvious that we weren't sure of our assignments, and guys, a lot of times whenever they were like the secondary assignments, like their job wasn't just, oh, get to X spot and set the edge. It's like, oh, read what's happening and do this, you know? They made a lot of bad decisions, and Oklahoma just like took advantage. You can't do that against OU. So yeah, our heads were spinning the entire time, and it's hard to play physical whenever you don't know what you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah, I would honestly feel better if these blown assignments were the result of us playing too aggressive, rather than feeling like everyone is tentative and we're kind of letting things happen in front of us and trying to figure out the move based on what's happening rather than making things happen. So yeah, your description of the difference really between our defense and theirs in this game was pretty spot on. It was OU's defense set the tone, and then we let OU's offense set the tone. So yeah, just really disheartening, especially because it's a continuation of problems that we've seen against offenses that are less prone to, or less competent than OU's. So this was sort of just the culmination of us doing things poorly while being punished by an offense that has the ability and the athletes to really make you pay for it. So it all sort of came to a head, and it's really starting to boil over, especially if you're a guy like Todd Orlando. A lot of the fan outrage is really building on Todd Orlando, because this is, the second season in a row where his defense is not showing the promise it showed in the first year. And that's becoming a trend for just Texas defensive coordinators in general. It's basically the first year they come in just trying to install their scheme. I mean, Manny Diaz did this, Vance Bedford did this, and now Todd Orlando. You install this scheme, it's pretty simple, pretty vanilla in the first year, where you're letting your athletes sort of figure it out, and then you try and make it more complex to stay ahead of the offenses that you're facing and are going to be facing throughout your tenure at Texas. And you end up just overcomplicating it so much that the offenses can just do basic things and your defense will play its way right out of position.
Yeah, there was an article I read recently. I can't remember who authored it. I want to say it was a national writer. And it wasn't even like an article so much as just like a comment. But they said that something that you see sometimes is coordinators will have a lot of success, whether it's offense or defense, at smaller schools by having like really complex schemes. And they can make up for a talent disadvantage in that way. But then they'll get these bigger gigs at places like Texas where they no longer have a talent disadvantage. Like, if anything, they have the advantage on their units. But they still try to do all these really complex things, and it ends up backfiring a little bit because, like, the chemistry isn't right for that team, or the guys don't take a hold of it, and they don't know what they're doing. And I think that we're seeing some of that with Orlando this year especially. Last year, I think that there was just, like, very clear issues with the defense. I don't, like, some of it was scheme, but, like, a lot of it was just, like, oh, Chris Boyd's going to give up two big plays a game. Like, oh, Chris Breckenhager is going to blow contain. He's going to get blown off the ball a couple times a game. Chris Nelson is going to stand firm but not do anything else. Wheeler slow. Like, all that stuff is, like, very easy to identify, and there's no real way to scheme around it. But I think it's Ian Boyd who, I mean, he's a Texas writer, so I want to give him a little bit of credit here, because he's kind of, like, point out that Texas has come out in different base sets every game this season. And so to kind of loop that back to what I was saying earlier, like previously, is I think that Orlando is trying to find this like magic formula, because he had it in 2017, right? Like, we had the lightning package. It fit our defensive personnel perfectly. It fit what the Big 12 offenses were running, and it worked great, and we had an elite unit. And so I think that Orlando is just continuing to tinker and trying to find that perfect thing. But we're already halfway into the season. Like, that should have been done weeks ago or in fall. You know, like, you can't keep doing that over the course of the entire season, or else you end up with guys that have been trained at five positions. You end up in that, you know, jack of all trades, master of none on your defense. And so, like, a guy like Osai, who could probably be an All-American at B-backer, is now playing B-backer, middle linebacker, and he's playing nickel. And he's doing fine at all of them. Like, he's actually good, even at nickel, which is just, like, a absolutely insane thing to say about a linebacker. He's held up fine there. But we haven't been able to settle in, and you can see a lot of that indecisiveness show up. So, I mean, we get turnovers, which was nice, and the defense wasn't the reason we lost the game, so I don't want to go too hard on them here, but I like Orlando. I just think he needs to get settled down a little bit.
Yeah, I know it seems like there is some calls. I know Scipio Tex has been a guy who's been very outspoken for basically the last year and a half about Todd Orlando really starting to wave that flag, asking for a change. And to move away from Todd Orlando. And while that's not something that's going to happen mid-season, no matter what, really, I think it's definitely fair with a lot of the discussion now is just, like you're talking about, just simplifying, not having so many different packages, not having so many different base defenses in a single season. Just make it more streamlined. And at this point, just try and out-athlete the other team. There's no team on our schedule, unless we come back to play Oklahoma again in the Big 12 championship, that can match up athlete for athlete with the guys that we have out there on the field. Even with the injuries that we have, even without Jalen Green, Caden Stearns, no one has a wide receiver core that can challenge our secondary beyond TCU just having Jalen Reagor who can threaten like that. There's no one who has that level of talent on the team. So just make it simple, make it straightforward, and let the guys just sort of do what's natural and be able to be aggressive without having to be too heady.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I like Orlando. We have a young defense, you know, so this could all pay dividends next year. I think we should give them at least one more year. We knew we were going to be young and inconsistent this year, but there's definitely room for improvement. But you want to talk a little bit about the offense and then move on to the Kansas preview?
Yeah, and I think for the offense, like I said, this was the most shocking part of it for me was how off the offense was. I mean, we started the year, especially with the LSU game, we saw how good we could play against an LSU secondary that's highly touted with the likes of Grant Delpit, with Derek Stingley, with Christian Fulton and Kerry Vincent. And we're able to find space, and we're able to throw all over them. And that was sort of what we expected coming into today, or into Saturday, was that we were going to be able to do the same. Even with the aggressiveness that OU displayed in the front seven, it was something where we felt like our offensive line had held up against LSU's front seven, which is, at worst, comparable two OUs. Thought we were going to be able to give Sam plenty of time, be able to take advantage of our full passing attack, and that never really came together. The entire right side of the offensive line was basically just getting absolutely ambushed every single snap. Zach Shackelford, I thought, specifically had a pretty bad game. Seemed like, and not even just in the fact of getting beat by the guy across from him, but as the center, you're supposed to be the guy more or less organizing your offensive line, making sure everyone has that communication, knows their assignment. And there were so many times where they missed up, or they messed up picking up a late blitzer, messed up sort of a transition on a stunt to pick up the man that was now in front of them. I mean, Ongalau was getting blown up. Kerstetter was all over the place.
The right side of the line has really struggled the last two games.
Yeah, and it's basically the opposite of how we started the year. We started the year thinking we had a good offensive line, and we had a really, really strong offense, and most of that expectation was built off of the performance that we put up against LSU. The offensive line played really well, and the offense seemingly moved the ball at will. And that was all happening despite slow starts from Sam. Sam wasn't coming in sharp to all those games where he was just throwing all over the place. For all the issues the offense had, it's hard to say that Sam had a bad game when it really just felt like he never got the chance to get going. Like, yeah, you had that one throw that was a little off to Jake Smith, that Jake Smith wasn't able to sort of contort his body and adjust for to come down with down the field. I mean, we just didn't give Sam the opportunity to show where he was physically and sort of the rhythm he might have been in as a passer. And I think that was probably the most frustrating thing for him. Was not being able to get that opportunity to prove that, or to prove himself in this game.
Yeah, Sam is now 1-3 in his career against OU. You know, he'll probably have three more chances, but I'm sure that's tough for him than the competitor that he is. And it's funny because it's basically, I agree with what you're saying, where it feels like the opposite of the start of the year. So to me, for LSU, I mean, I guess La Tech and Rice too, I mean, not that those were like games that really matter, but it felt like Sam's level of play was the ceiling for the offense. So like we saw in LSU, the first half he didn't play very well, the offense didn't do very well, but he played great in the second half, and his offense was great in the second half. So I really thought that was going to be the case where we had a good, like effective, successful running game, even if it wasn't explosive. We had receivers that were making big plays, you know, safety valves in Duvernay, and a great offensive line. So it was really up to Sam to determine what the offense was going to be. But this is 2 weeks in a row now where it hasn't felt that way. And I get that Sam hasn't had his best games against West Virginia and Oklahoma, but I really don't think that he was bad. A lot of people have really criticized him for this Oklahoma game, but I don't blame him for a lot of these offensive struggles. You know, there were some drops. He wasn't getting time. Other times he did have time, but it was just obvious that no one was open downfield. Like a couple times we ran 7-man protection packages, which means you only have 3 receivers, and they would only rush 3 or 4. So if you only have 3 receivers and they have 7 or 8 defenders, of course nobody's going to be open downfield, you know? And then you're left with a spy on Sam, and they're still getting pressure and a sack. It's just the opposite to me, where now Sam is playing above the level of the offense, and it's not working. It feels like the offensive line, specifically the right side, and the running game is kind of letting him down, as well as some of those receivers not named Devin Duvernay, Colin Johnson.
Yeah, I thought the entire offense was going to open back up. I was hoping that the West Virginia game was sort of just sleepwalking through, but I thought the return of Colin Johnson was going to give us a lot. But I think really the only thing that disappointed me with Sam was not so much that he wasn't doing the right thing, but just that reminder that he's not the dual threat in the sense of a Lamar Jackson, where when the line collapses or the pocket collapses a little bit, he can just shoot forward, take 3 steps, and he's picked up a ton of yards because he's got the wheels to do that. Because there were a few of those sacks where I just was screaming from the stands wanting him to step up and just take off, just take the like 4 or 5 yards that you would get before OU's defense would close down on the scramble. And he wasn't really seeing that. But at a certain point, you can't just keep taking those little bits of yardage when it feels like the offense is completely not running at all. You desperately want to make that big play to hopefully give the offense some juice. And I think the only one who produced any real big chunk play was Roschon Johnson. Had that one really long run in the third quarter to set up really our first touchdown. He had something like a 57-yard run or something like that. And with the game that Roschon Johnson had, it's surprising how little we tried to turn to him. Seemed like we were trying to run with Keontae Ingram. He was getting nowhere, not just in the run game, but anytime we'd try and do little dump-off passes, he'd get brought down immediately if he caught the ball at all. And then Roschon Johnson comes in, has a few really good runs and that one really big one. And I mean, just that all of this stuff added together, Roschon Johnson's actually now our leading rusher, which is, again, alarming, like we discussed, that our leading rusher,
a true freshman quarterback,
is a guy who was not playing running back like 6 weeks ago, or at this point, maybe 8 to 10 weeks ago. He was not a running back. He was our third string quarterback, and he's now our number one running back.
Yeah, that's not... It's not good. And I think it does speak to Ingram's struggles. And, you know, I have been, and I think I still am, on Team Ingram, you know, in terms of, like, who should start. Because it's tough. Like, you're talking about how, like, absurd it is that this converted true freshman quarterback is our leading rusher. And, like, that, it's absurd for a reason, because it doesn't happen very often and it shouldn't happen. And so I can understand the hesitation by Herman and the rest of the offensive staff to really feed him. Because that can come crumbling down at any moment, right? Like one bad fumble and suddenly this freshman that probably shouldn't have had to have been in this situation makes this like game-changing mistake. So I can understand the hesitation, and that's why I'm sure they're continuing to go with Ingram. But I also think that like it's pretty clear at this point that Roschon deserves to be number one, even if he's not actually the better back.
The only other phase of the game that exists other than offense and defense is the special teams. And Derek Wareheim and his coaching reared its ugly head yet again. Our special teams, outside of Cameron Dicker kicking one really good field goal and not getting any attempts again after that, was a mess yet again. Ryan Bucheski had one really good punt that was down inside the five. Very Dicko-like, but otherwise he really didn't have a great game. He didn't get a whole lot of hang time. CeeDee Lamb was fielding punts with several yards of space between him and the closest coverage guy, giving him space. Even on punts where, I mean, Bucheski just wasn't getting hang time, wasn't getting yardage. It just really wasn't going anywhere. And then kick returns were especially bad, to the point that Devin Duvernay taking a knee on a kick return to get the touchback like garnered probably the biggest cheer out of the Texas fan base in the second half.
Yeah, it was pretty poor. Then there was also the one kick return that was down at like the five. that wasn't good.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that they're trying to make a play. Everyone was aware that the offense really wasn't running, wasn't working, and they're desperately trying to get something for the team to build off of. But at a certain point, you got to just cut your losses and say, hey, we have started the last six drives like at or around our own 15-yard line. Just take a knee, take the extra 10 yards, and maybe with a little bit of space, without feeling like we're in the shadow of the goalpost, we can find some space and get something going here. But it was just every single time was basically shooting ourselves in the foot, giving OU more confidence by trying to return a kick from 3 yards deep in the end zone and getting to the 12-yard line and getting taken down by the special teams. So now we're disheartened because we had a bad return, and OU's defense is pumped up because, hell yeah, special teams just gave us great starting field position. So special teams continues to be a mess. It'll probably continue to be a mess the rest of the season unless someone takes over the reins of coordinating special teams from Derek Wareheim, who somehow got promoted to that position this offseason for absolutely no reason. I still cannot put together what Herman was thinking when he was like, that's our guy. Nyvar's going to be a co-defensive coordinator. He's not going to have time for special teams. Derek Wareheim, I know you ain't doing shit coaching tight ends. How about you don't do shit coaching special teams now?
All right, well, final note on the game. Then we'll move on to our Kansas preview after a quick break. Just a couple last thoughts, kind of taking stock of this season now that we're at the midway point. You know, we're 4-2, we're halfway through, and so the good news is the hard games are over. Oklahoma and LSU are both done. There's nothing to change it. And the bad news is that we went 0-2 in our big games, you know? And so the thing about these scheduling out-of-conference opponents is that whenever you play games against elite teams, those are going to be difficult games. They're hard to win, but it's an opportunity to show that you are an elite team, you know, that you can beat them. Like last year, we went 2-1 against OU and UGA. But on the other hand, if you don't win those games, then it shows that you don't belong, you know? So it's a double-edged sword. It's the same thing that A&M is going through right now with like 5 games against top 10 opponents. Like, they go 0-5, that just shows that very clearly they're not like an elite team. They can't play with the elite teams. They can't beat them. But if they win a couple, then that entire narrative changes. And for us, we're 0-2, and there's no real way to change that. And actually, that's not true. We might see Oklahoma again in the Big 12 championship game, and we're currently projected to play LSU in the Sugar Bowl, you know, so we actually probably do have 2 more shots at redemption, even if we don't play LSU again.
And we do have a ranked Baylor still coming.
But in terms of those like mega elite teams and the chance to prove ourselves on the national stage and the chance to actually show that we're back to being a top tier program, we can still do it. That's the positive note for this season, you know, like if we could go on a crazy run and finish 12-2 and finish like top 5. But I definitely think that this entire Oklahoma experience this year, for me, the reason that it was like sad and not angry is because I think that it helps. It's just like it was a very fast moment in which we're all readjusting our expectations for this team in the middle of the season. You know, like we're happy with the defense, but like, should we really be happy with the defense giving up that many yards and giving up like 8 yards carry on the ground? It's kind of a realization that we're changing our standards and then we're still not actually achieving the level of play that we need to. But hey, we got half the season, I guess, to redeem ourselves now.
Yep. Hopefully this game proves to be a watershed moment in the 2019 campaign and even moving forward into 2020. This episode of the Fire Tom Herman podcast on Hornscast is sponsored by Last Stand Hats, the number one place for real Texas fans to get their game day gear. Last Stand Hats gives Texas fans the opportunity to showcase their burnt orange pride by providing apparel options outside the standard block T and Longhorn logos. If you're looking for more variety in your Longhorn gear, you have to check out laststandhats.com. And if you use the code HORNSCAST10 at checkout, you'll save 10% on your order. So make sure to wear your heart on your head and go to laststandhats.com. Hook 'em. All right, and with that, we're moving forward. OU game. We'll never be completely washed out of our minds, unfortunately, but we can look forward to our next opponent. Got the Kansas. Go 1-0. Exactly. Go 1-0, just like Tom Herman preaches. Focus on Kansas. Got the Jayhawks coming to town. Finally back in Austin for the first time in seemingly forever. I mean, we played LSU. We were away for Rice, and then we were back home for Oklahoma State, and then we had bye week, West Virginia, Oklahoma and Dallas. So this is basically the first time that we've been back home at DKR in about a month.
Yep, and we get to wear our 1969 throwback uniforms. So that's exciting.
Yeah, hopefully that sort of being able to look back 50 year anniversary of the 69 national title team. Hopefully sort of all of that atmosphere, sort of just thinking about those teams helps this team bounce back. And it helps that it's going to be Kansas, who, despite all the changes this year, not just for them, but for the Big 12 overall, still appear to be the weakest team by a clear margin in the Big 12. So hopefully this is a chance for the defense to bounce back, the offense to bounce back, and for us to sort of move forward and really get ready to crush it and hopefully build some momentum back into what will hopefully be another shot at Oklahoma in the Big 12 title game. First off, we got some injuries. It's been a theme this whole season. Continued to pick up more of them against Oklahoma. Chris Brown, the safety, who has really, I think, had a pretty good breakout year for how loaded our secondary is, has really stood out as a great player. He might be out for the rest of the season as he fractured his forearm on one of CeeDee Lamb's touchdowns. So that kind of sucks.
Yeah, that's big.
Yeah, I mean, he's an upperclassman. He hadn't had a ton of playing time before this year, but he's had a ton of time in the system in college. So, I mean, that sort of upperclassman leadership is hard to miss.
Yeah, and his versatility and consistency, too, game to game. Probably the most consistent player on the defense.
And he's had a few big hits, too. So, I mean, he's been a guy to set the tone for this defense. So we'll see how we recover again, it is still at safety. It is theoretically still our deepest position, but we'll see what happens there. Also, to go along with that upperclassman leadership going out injured, we've got Jeffrey McCulloch, dislocated his shoulder on a hit against OU, and he will miss several weeks. Don't have a timetable on that. It could be season-ending. It could be, effectively, for McCulloch, career-ending, as he is a senior. So that would be really unfortunate. Colin Johnson, he was back against Oklahoma. He was probably our best receiver in terms of just raw production against OU. Took a helmet-to-helmet hit, though, so that sucks. Knocked him out of the OU game, but he was never formally diagnosed with a concussion. So we'll see what happens. I mean, it's been a we'll see what happens for the past several weeks with Colin Johnson up until the OU game. Hopefully this isn't knocking him back out, but I think he's going to play. If he hasn't been diagnosed with a concussion by now, I expect he'll be in. And then there's Jordan Whittington, who basically, I think this podcast is unofficially becoming Jordan Whittington watch. He's already been ruled out for the Kansas game. It's not been, wasn't really touch and go. Like maybe he could sneak back in like we thought it might be a few weeks ago. But he's going to be out at least one more game, continuing to recover from that sports hernia. And at this point, I think for him, you get into serious discussions of whether or not it's better to just redshirt.
Yeah, it is kind of that point in the season where they could redshirt him. I don't expect them to. Like, if it happens to be that he only plays three more games because of injury, then we probably, I mean, then he'll be redshirted. But otherwise, I don't expect him to just because he's not a five-year guy. Like, there's no point in saving a redshirt if a guy's not going to be here his fifth year, you know? And given the struggles in the Definitely. Running back room, I think that that's something that, like, he could bring a little bit of a different element in terms of explosiveness.
Yeah, we could definitely use some electricity back there. For everything that Roschon Johnson has added, sort of that breakaway home run hitter vibe is not what you get from Roschon.
I did love watching him run down the field against OU, and he's 40 yards downfield, and he's still carrying the ball high and tight. Like, he was not going to fumble that ball. I don't know, just funny. Because guys that are going for the end zone, they don't carry the ball high and tight, you know? But Roschon knew he was going to get run down at some point.
Last guy, not an injury, but he will be missing time. Malcolm Roach had that targeting penalty in the third quarter against OU. He will be out for the first half because of that, because he was ejected. Missed the second half against Oklahoma. It's going to miss the first half in this game. So, again, more upperclassmen leadership that is going to be absent for at least part of the game. So we'll see how this defense responds, because this is a Kansas offense where we're coming in with a lot of questions. They've been real bad so far this season. Outside of their Boston College game where they popped off for like 55 points, they've averaged less than 18 points per game. So they fired their offensive coordinator 6 games into the season, have a new one for Les Miles, and so now we're all kind of sitting here like, don't really know what to expect coming into this game.
Yeah, that's a quick trigger finger from Les.
And it's really odd for Les Miles, given how long he spent with his offensive coordinator at LSU running Stone Age offenses, despite everyone and their mother screaming at him to update.
It had to have been something off the field. Like, there had to have been something more to it. Like, it's not like their offense is good. It's not like the... But still, like, first year, you know that you're taking on probably the worst... I mean, you're taking charge of the worst team in the Power Five, and you're getting to bring in all of your own guys for your first year. It's not like you have fan expectations to be good. You've already won a game against another Power Five opponent, which probably buys you 5 years of amnesty at Kansas. And then you fire your...
But you did also lose in a game where you only scored 7 points against Coastal Carolina.
This is true. So, I mean, I'm not saying that it's, like, wrong to fire the offensive coordinator, but it's definitely odd and something you don't see very often from first year head coaches. So yeah, we don't really know what to expect from their offense. We do know that defense will be much more talented than their offense, and we know that they've got a guy in Puka Williams.
Yeah, Puka Williams Jr., the running back, played a big role in our game on Black Friday up in Lawrence last year. This year figures to have a big impact as well. Though it is interesting, for all the hype he's gotten, he's averaging less than 5 yards per carry. He did miss the first game due to his domestic violence stuff in the offseason. He was suspended for a game. But even still, he's really kind of gotten off to a slow start. Through the 5 games, he's averaging barely 90 yards per game, including big games against Boston College. And I think he had 140 yards against OU, which is a bit alarming given how our run game looked against OU. So it's another one. A lot of questions where Puka Williams really is as far as his ability as a runner this season compared to last. Yeah.
There's no better time for him to return to his true form than this week.
It would just feel sort of like, yeah, that sounds right. If that happens to us again, where it's someone suddenly finds their legs, I think most of us would just be like, yep, that is our luck. That's how it always works, is our defense will fix.
Yeah, and we're like kind of joking here, you know, like, I mean, Kansas is not a good football team. We should win this game pretty handily. We want to go over the players to watch in the preview and everything so that everybody kind of knows what to look for. But, you know, I hope Herman doesn't have the same nonchalant attitude that we do, because I think that losing to Kansas is a fireable offense around here, you know? That's what finally got Charlie in year three. Herman's in year three. Maybe our name will be a little bit more serious next week. We'll see.
Let's hope so. Also, playing offense for the Kansas Jayhawks, there are other non-Puka Williams players, which is a little bit shocking, just based on the headlines that you hear about Les Miles' offense are focused nearly exclusively on Puka. Quarterback Carter Stanley, while he's got less than 1,200 yards passing, he's actually doing all right as far as when they get to the red zone, converting into touchdowns. He has 12 touchdown passes on the year, which for a team as bad as Kansas, you would generally expect the quarterback to be a weak link, but he's got 12 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, which is a lot, but that's still 3-1 for a ratio. That's not what you expect out of a team that only has 1 win in 6 tries this year.
And 4 of those touchdowns are to wide receiver Andrew Parchment. He seems to be their best option out wide. 32 catches, 422 yards, 4 touchdowns. I mean, that's pretty good for halfway through the season. You know, 60 catches, 800 yards, and 8 touchdowns is nothing to scoff at. So we are going to need those cornerbacks who, I mean, even this past week against OU have definitely come a far way this season. They're going to need to keep it up.
Yeah, so they won't be able to take a game off. It's not going to be as much of a sort of relax and just play type of game. They are going to still be challenged. So I think this is a good offense for us to settle into that. Hopefully, Todd Orlando simplifying and streamlining the defense. Just let our athletes be athletes and give guys like DeShawn Jameson and Anthony Cook the chance to not have to overcommit to things. Really just focus on covering their guy and give them a chance against a pretty decent, all things considered, wide receiving core for Kansas. So it's not an offense that's going to make you pay for mistakes, but it's good enough to where you can still gain a lot out of playing against them.
Let's go ahead and move on to the defense, the Kansas defense. And you want to get that?
Yeah, I think this is going to be another one that will be, you think it's going to be really easy, but it'll be sort of deceptive, and it'll be a good chance, again, for the offense to be able to find itself just in the lower quality of opponent, but also still have some challenge to it. It looks like their defense, Kansas's defense, gets a lot of pressure with linebackers. So that's going to be relying on a lot of those blitzes, a lot of stunts, a lot of designs up front to try and get those linebackers free to the quarterback. So it's going to be a chance for Zach Shackelford as the center to have a bounce back game in directing his offensive linemen to work on their protection. An area they really struggled last week with the 8 or 9 sacks. I don't remember how it was officially scored. But Kansas doesn't force a lot of turnovers, so there's not going to be a ton to worry about, at least as far as the offense sort of sputtering and shooting itself in the foot. But again, I think the real area to look at for Texas is how the offensive line does against the front 7 that is going to try and confuse them to get to Sam.
I agree, because we really need to shore that up. It's disheartening that they're struggling with some of that stuff at this point in the season. And I mean, it happens. It's going to happen sometimes, but not. It needs to improve. And yeah, I mean, their defense did slow down OU in the first half last week before OU kind of figured it out there at the end of the second or the end of the first half. They forced as many punts against Oklahoma as we did, including a 4th-and-goal, which is kind of funny. But yeah, they don't force many turnovers, and that was the biggest difference in our Oklahoma game and their Oklahoma game was we managed to force a couple turnovers there in the red zone to kind of keep ourselves alive. I guess we can talk about a couple of their players. They got a cornerback named Hassan Defense, which, I mean, that's a pretty appropriate name for the guy that's probably their best defensive player and maybe their best player overall.
Yeah, I would probably, I mean, just with how Puka Williams has started the year so slowly, I would call Hassan Defense their best player. And yeah, the name fits for a guy who plays defense, and he plays it at a pretty high level. He's a good cover cornerback, but I feel like the rest of the secondary for Kansas is weak enough to where you don't have to challenge him if you don't want to. So we'll see who he ends up lining up against, if he's going to be the guy against Colin Johnson or Brennan Eagles, or if he's going to be inside going up against Jake Smith and Devin Duvernay. But we've got enough weapons in the wide receiver room to where I feel like there's no reason for us to be challenging that side of the field in the passing game. The other guy I think is worth taking a look at and keeping an eye on throughout the game is one of those linebackers that I talked about Kansas working to try and get free in the pass rush. Linebacker Drew Prox. He's kind of all over the field. I guess he would be sort of the closest thing to Joseph Osai as far as a guy that they're going to line up wherever and ask him to do a lot of things. He'll drop back in coverage. He's a pretty high volume tackler. He's got the second most tackles on the team. And he's has the third most sacks. I think he's got two or three sacks on the year. So he's a guy I expect will be as all over the field as any player outside of Hassan Defense for the Jayhawks when our offense is on the field.
Yeah, and so then lastly, we'll go and finish up some of the more serious preview just by taking a look at their kickers. And so they have two guys, but it seems like one, Liam Jones, is getting most of the kicks. And he's 4-6 on the year, and basically under 40 yards, he's 4-4, more than 40 yards, 0-2. And he's actually missed two extra points. So their kicking game is not strong, which that's pretty common for college kickers, especially at not good football teams, you know. So no surprise there, seeing that they have a long of 36 yards on the year.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me to see another situation like we saw against Louisiana Tech, where if our defense can make a stop kind of just outside the red zone, we've got a pretty good chance of coming away with shutting them out for that drive. Just because, I didn't go back and scrub and look for those 240-plus yard attempts that Jones has on the year. But if he's missing two extra points as well, I can't imagine those 40-plus yarders were super close. Now for the real serious part of our preview is our favorite segment every week when we're doing the preview is going through the roster and finding the all-name team candidates. You've already heard the first one, Hassan Defense. Too perfect a name for the best defender on your team to be literally called Defense.
I'm going to go with Cameron McQueen because I know some McQueens and they're pretty cool people. But Cameron spelled with a K, which is kind of the curveball there.
I feel like that's a very sort of Texan name. It would feel right for having him as like a walk-on for us. It's just Cameron McQueen.
Yeah,
I
want him
cowboy.
To have a C.
Yeah, I don't know. The K sort of throws it off. But yeah. Opposite of Hassan Defense, they have cornerback Elmore Hempstead Jr. Feels very formal.
And I'll go and pick up Azure Kamara, which is Azure is a really cool name. But yeah, they've got him on the wrong side of the ball. He's a linebacker and not a running back, wide receiver, do-it-all guy. And he's also probably not as good as Alvin. So, but they do have an A. Kamara, and that counts for like something in fantasy.
I feel like there can't be that many Kamaras running around. My final pick is going to be wide receiver Daylon Charlotte. And I don't really have much else to say about that other than it being Daylon Charlotte.
All right, cool. Well, then we'll just move right into the score predictions. Texas is a 21-point favorite, and we'll do hot takes as well. You want to go and share yours first?
Yeah, so I think this is a bit of a bounce-back game. Obviously, you're not going to be able to take a ton away, just given, again, the talent disparity that there is between us and Kansas. I think I would be a lot more nervous about the potential for some of that Les Miles meme magic, sort of Super Bowl level play again from one of our opponents if we were playing in Lawrence. I would feel a little bit nervous about us being able to cover the spread and even be able to win the game just with how weird Les Miles can get in those big games throughout his career as a head coach. But I think our bounce back comes primarily on offense. I think the defense has a little bit of bounce back against the run. So my hot take is going to be that no Kansas player has more than 50 yards rushing, but I still do expect problems with the defense. So I'm going to say that Texas is going to take that step forward, sort of fix some things on offense, score 48 points, but the defense is still going to find a way to give up 27. So we're right on there for that 21-point spread, but still going to look like a blowout on the scoreboard. Still going to be some unhappy people with Todd Orlando.
Yeah, and I'm taking 45-17. It's weird because I feel like this game is going to be closer than what we want. So like maybe that just means they stick around for the first half, or like we get off to a slow start on offense or something like that. But I think by the end of it, we'll have a pretty good margin of victory there. And my hot take is actually going to be that we double their total yardage. We haven't actually done that this year. We almost did it against Rice. We had like 510 yards and they had around 265, so we got close. But I think that we'll be able to, you know, put up some pretty good yardage on them, have a couple long sustained drives. And for the most part, I think that we'll be able to handle their offense pretty well.
It'd be nice to have a bit of a bounce back on both sides of the ball. You're obviously a little more positive about the defense's chance to bounce back than I am. I'd love it if you were right. And I mean, hell, if both of our hot takes could be right, that would be best for everyone. That does it for this week's episode. We're probably going to be switching to just doing one episode per week for at least the foreseeable future. Turns out doing two episodes a week, finding two times to record is kind of difficult when you are not exclusively professional podcasters. So we're going to move back to something that's a little bit easier for everyone. So sorry to anyone who looks forward to two episodes a week, but that's what we got to do. That's what we're going to do. For more Fire Tom Herman-ness, be sure to follow us on Twitter at the FTH Podcast. And also be sure to follow Hornscast, both on Twitter and on whatever podcast listening platform you're listening on right now. And that'll help you keep up with our show, keep up with 4th and 5, BC Unplugged. Feel like it's coming up on time. I know Bitter White Guy's been starting to write his previews for the basketball teams, so that means Pretend We're Football, probably one of the only sort of exclusively Texas basketball podcasts on the web. That'll also be coming back to Hornscast here pretty soon. Thank you to our sponsor, again, Last Stand Hats. Use the code HORNSCAST10 to save 10% on your purchase at laststandhats.com. We will see you guys next week to discuss the Kansas game and preview TCU. Hook 'em.